What is a pharmacy benefit manager? What do they do, and is this good for the public?
So, pharmacy benefit manager, you hear that word and you say, huh? Most people will say, what? And I can tell you right off the bat, is it good for the public? No. So, the idea of benefit, no, it doesn't exist. What it is, it's benefit for themselves. I found this out. There's a chapter on it. I was absolutely stunned to realize how this became the case. Why do we in the United States pay the highest drug prices in the world? Part because we're the only country in the world. We're one of two who allow drug companies to advertise to consumers. We're the only drug company country in the world that allowed them to set their own prices without any negotiation, unfettered pricing. And in the 1980s, when insurance became bigger and bigger, and drug companies were coming up with formularies to say, these are on our list of drugs that are approved, we'll pay for these drugs. A group of companies came together, PCS and others, some developed by drug companies themselves, that said, we'll process the paperwork. We'll go ahead and take the paperwork from the insurance companies and process it, sort of like payroll processing for companies. And they became known as pharmacy benefit managers. Well, over time, those pharmacy benefit managers had the ability to actually make the formulary list up. And they decide which drugs are going to be on and which ones are going to be covered. And guess what? They aren't required by law, because they aren't regulated, to go ahead and pick the best drugs. They aren't required to pick the cheapest drugs. They're required to pick the drugs they want. And sometimes the drug companies give them rebates to pick their drug, and they aren't required by law to disclose those rebates to anybody. So we are dealing with a middle person here in the drug distribution process only in America that is literally worth billions of dollars. And the pharmacy benefit manager companies like Caremark and others are multi-billion dollar companies that are earning money off of being the middle person, and all they do is their profits come from extra prices paid by us in the end, the patients. It's a terrible story that just needs reform and isn't being reformed.
Is there a different price if I pay cash instead of insurance for a drug at the drugstore?
So it's hard to imagine that you could have insurance. We pay a lot of money for drug insurance most of the time, to be part of us. Even people who are in Medicare 65 and over have to usually have a separate policy for drug coverage. So you would think that if you're being insulted by having to pay for drug coverage, you'd probably at least would have the benefit of getting the best price when you go into pharmacy, and that's not always the case. So what happens is, hard to imagine that you could go in and your drug policy may require you to pay a $20 or $30 copay for a particular drug. You may have a drug that you take out for cholesterol. That a pharmacist will say that'll be a $30 drug pay. You've saved $550 today, otherwise you would have had to pay that. Well, if you actually came in with no insurance at all and said, what's the cash price? Sometimes it's less than your copay. No, that's hard to imagine, but true. And the best part of this is pharmacy benefit managers were able to make it the case in all 50 states. It's now slowly being whittled away that it was against the law for the pharmacist to tell you, as the patient, that there was a cheaper price if you paid cash. They only had to tell you if you asked. So if you said, as an informed consumer, by the way, I'm filling this prescription under my insurance, my copay is $20. Is it cheaper if I pay the cash price? The pharmacist then had to tell you. Yes, it's only $8. But if you didn't ask, the pharmacist wouldn't tell you. And that is how drug pricing in America is made at the detriment of us, consumers, patients, those given prescriptions, and the benefit of those who are reaping the profits in the distribution process and in the pharmaceutical companies.
So, are the insurance companies for or against the higher drug prices?
The insurance companies cover some of the higher drug prices. They are for making money, as everybody is in the process. And so if they lose money on drugs, then they don't like it. So let's assume that there's a very, very expensive drug, and it's $200,000 a year for a genetic illness, and you have that genetic illness. They go ahead and cover that. That's on their formulary. They're going to have to pay for that. So they work that out. And they assume that they're going to make money instead by charging 4 million people who need just a generic antibiotic, $4 an antibiotic, when it really is costing them 10 cents. And that somehow balances out. They occasionally get it wrong, but for the most part, they are not covering expensive drugs because they have the spirit of Gandhi or Mother Teresa. They aren't doing it out of the goodness of their heart. they have calculated that they have to cover it in some instances because they're being forced to by the government, but they are covering the minimum they want. And when you hear about the process of being required to make sure that it's medically necessary, this is a process where drug companies, insurance companies often push you off of the name brands and try to get you to take a generic as early as possible because they don't want to pay the extra money.
How did Valium become so popular?
Valium became so popular because it was the marketing genius of Arthur Sackler, who's the patriarch of the Sackler family. He opened up an advertising firm for drug companies. And we say advertising firm, this is in the late 50s. So he wasn't advertising to consumers, but he was advertising to consumers because Sackler was diabolically a genius when it came to marketing. So he went to Hoffman LaRoche, went to him and said, you just made an antibiotic, the number one selling drug in America, and it had no difference from its competitors in terms of its structure. We have a new drug. They had Librium out first. And he decided to make Librium the number one drug in America, which he did for 3 years. It's the first of the benzodiazepines. Then it succeeded 3 years later by Valium, which he makes the number one drug in America for 15 years. And how does he do it? He makes it part of the American consciousness. He puts it into articles. He has people write about it. He prepared packaged articles that would be sent out to editors, at journalists, at New Health columns, and said, here's a new wonder drug. They would write about Valium in Time Magazine and Newsweek and others. He would run a four-page color spread in the middle of National Geographic or Life Magazine. Those magazines would be sent free to doctors' offices at a time when they had waiting rooms. He would sit in the waiting room. And then the FTC would come to him at one point and say, by the way, you're running ads inside a consumer magazine for this drug. You're not supposed to be advertising to the public. And Sackler actually went before the Senate and said, oh, by the way, we only intend those ads to be for doctors, and they're perforated edges along the edge of the insert in the magazine. So doctors are supposed to pull them out before they put it out in their waiting room. Of course, that never happened. So he was a master at getting around the rules. He put it into everything from what I call Valium's ladies clubs to, you know, the idea of what we call pills around the country. He popularized Valium and made it think as though it was what he called an everyday pill. A pill that you could take if you didn't have that many problems. It had no downside. You wouldn't become addicted to it. It didn't have any long-term effects. It would make you feel a little bit better about the stress of dealing with life. And he marketed it to women so that they wouldn't be neurotic and hysterical, as he called it, because that's how he viewed it. And he marketed it to men because they were the breadwinners, so they wouldn't get ulcers when they went to work and brought home the money. And today we look at that type of advertising strategy and say, how sexist, how was it possible that he could have done it? But it worked. And it took 15 years to find out that Valium and all the benzodiazepines were in fact very addictive, that they caused a whole host of series, that they were difficult to get off of, that they caused problems with individuals, they caused liver problems and kidney problems and depression. And by that time, Hoffman LaRoche had made literally more money from Valium than any company had ever made in the world at that point.